Morning, good morning. I'm glad to be here with the indomitable, incomparable Lloyd Jackson.
Good to see you, Reverend.
There's some things I always want to do in life.
What's that?
Now I've achieved one of them. I'm going to sit here with you at 6 in the morning on WGR, where Paul W. Smith, who I idolize and I imitate on occasion, once sat.
Absolutely. Yeah, Paul is a great guy. He's on now 12 to 2 with Focus. Rev, I got to ask you about the weather that's coming our way. It's going to be hot this week.
Well, I just left West Palm, a place down there. So it was warm and hot, 102 degrees. I always tell people when it's 104, which I hear it's supposed to be here, that this is perfect audition for where you want to spend eternity.
Oh, man.
If you think this is hot.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, doctors across Metro Detroit, they are warning residents to take the upcoming dangerous heat seriously. Temperatures climbing into the 90s. Yeah. We should get, could get some hundreds for a couple of days. Health experts say that extreme heat can quickly become life-threatening, especially to older adults and young children and people with chronic conditions.
So I know someone 34 years of age who put on one of those hydration suits and went out running in 100-degree weather in the middle of the day, and they found him dead. So it is something to take very seriously. And, you know, I mean, if you got air conditioning in your home, just turn it up and turn it down and enjoy yourself.
Drink plenty of water throughout the day. Wear light clothing. Avoid strenuous outdoor activity during peak afternoon heat as well. Doctors are also urging residents to check on the neighbors and protect pets and you know, stay in the shade if you can. And that's another thing, too, Rev. A lot of times people will leave their pets in the car. They'll leave their kids in the car.
Yeah.
And you can't – I mean, it takes a minute or two for it to get sizzling inside a car.
Right. And by the way, if you're sleeping in your car, find somewhere cold to go into.
It's, absolutely.
Be very careful.
Hundreds of parishioners gathered yesterday for a final mass at Our Lady Queen of Heaven in Detroit, marking the end of an era of a historic parish in the Archdiocese of Detroit's ongoing restructuring plan. And for many longtime members, the church was more than just a building. It was a spiritual home filled with decades of memories. And parishioners described the final service as emotional and difficult as they reflected on dwindling attendance and the reality that the closure had become unavoidable. And starting July 1st, the church will no longer be used as a Catholic worship site. The archdiocese says the parish will continue in a new form, with St. Raymond serving as the main parish church and St. Jude handling select services. The closure is part of a broader two-year restructuring effort aimed at reducing the number of parishes across Southeast Michigan.
Well, Lyle Schaller, who is a church demographer, said something, and it's in the context of all churches are shrinking, not swelling, swelling. You know, that for the first time in the history of Christianity, there are more believers than belongers.
Wow.
And he says, but, you know, me and God are fine. It's the rest of the folks I have trouble with. They love Jesus, can't stand nobody else.
Okay.
I mean, the Catholic Church obviously has a proliferation of churches. It is height. Every community in Detroit had its church. And we've seen this trend go on for quite a while.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that with all the stuff that's happened in the Catholic Church, the dioceses now are more independent, and they have to cover the expenses of those churches within that area by themselves. So it's not a surprise. If I had millions of dollars, I would not buy a building. I have a fundamental issue with churches spending 67% of the revenue, tithes and offerings of struggling people who can't put roofs on their homes sometimes to support a building. The money should go into ministry and people, not buildings.
A tragic incident unfolded in the Detroit River on Friday night when a teenage girl drowned near Meharis Gentry Park. Detroit police say officers were called around 8:30 p.m. after reports of two teenagers in the water, and one teen was able to safely make it back to shore. The second did not resurface. And multiple agencies, including the U.S. Coast Guard, Detroit Fire Department, Harbor Master, DPD dive team, they all launched a coordinated search and recovery effort. Officials say a younger child, the victim's 9-year-old sister, was also in the water but was rescued by bystanders who rushed to help. Detroit Mayor Mary Sheffield called the loss heartbreaking, offering condolences to the family and praising those who acted quickly to save the younger child. Authorities say the investigation into the circumstances surrounding the drowning is ongoing.
Well, two things. One, I'm glad my daughter commented. You know, she's a minister, and any loss under any circumstances tragic. But listen, man, people still underestimate that river.
That's it.
That Reverend. River has a current.
The current, yes.
It's flowing down river to Lake Erie, and the pool is just not necessarily something that people estimate.
Absolutely.
It looks like it's calm, but it's not.
Even the strongest swimmers
have difficulty in that water.
Yes.
So, I mean, I would caution going to the Belle Isle Beach.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've never messed with the Detroit River. Never will.
Okay. The Detroit Red Wings added a new offensive weapon to the in the 2026 NHL draft, selecting left wing J.P. Herbert with the 23 overall pick. Herbert is an 18-year-old from Allen, Texas, most recently played for the Kamloops Blazers in the Western Hockey League, where he posted an impressive 42 goals, 97 points in 68 games. The season before, he competed with the U.S. National Development Team, adding 31 points and 34 games. After taking Herbert in the first round, Detroit continued building depth through the draft, selecting six more players across multiple positions. Those picks include Victor Plant in the second round, goaltender Michael Orsalak in the third, center Adam Levac in the fourth, Beckham Edwards in the fifth, Luca Arco in the sixth, and defensive man Miles Bronson in the seventh round. The Red Wings say the group add skill, size, and long-term potential to their system. I know they needed to do something.
Yeah, I think they ought to hire you just to announce their names. Now, I wonder if Hurlbert spelled yes. like the Hurlbert Gate at Waterworks Park.
Huh, H-U-R-L-B-E-R-T.
Yeah, well, I think okay. Hurlbert here is B-U-T.
B-U-T, okay.
And, of course, you know at one point that family left money for anyone that would name their child Hurlbert.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And do you know that? You know the Freeman Hendricks' real name is Hurlbert?
I didn't know Freeman's real name is Herbert. Okay, boy, I learn something new every day.
And I tell people all the time, it's an L, not her butt.
Okay.
Not her butt, her butt.
Okay. And the Detroit Tigers wrapped
I'm
up their
fun, man.
The Tigers wrapped up their 10-game homestand with a 7-5 loss to the Houston Astros Sunday at Comerica Park. As late-inning bullpen struggles once again proved costly, Detroit held a 3-run lead late, but the Astros stormed back with home runs in the 7th and 8th innings before breaking the game open with 4 runs off Kinsley Jansen in the 10th. So
they've gone from the roar to the bore.
Yeah.
I like this rapid fire we got going here.
But the thing is though, Reverend, when the pitching is good, the hitting's not good. And when the hitting's good,
yeah.
the pitching's
I mean that's
not good.
That's the nature of the game. Everything has to be working together.
Exactly.
I mean, what a disappointment, man. We were, looking like we were building quite a team and now it looks like we don't have a team.
Yeah, it looks that way. Coming up at 6:19, we'll be speaking with Mike Lee. He's the managing editor of Crane's Detroit Business for the Crane's News of the Day. That's next on 760 WJR. Welcome back to JR Morning on 760 WJR. I'm here with my co-host this morning, the Reverend Horace Sheffield. And it's time for the Crane's interview. It's brought to you by Mercantile Bank. Looking for a new business, Bank? Mercantile can help drive your business forward. Learn more at mercbank.com. Let's bring in right now Mike Lee. He's the managing editor of Crane's Detroit Business. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Lloyd. How are you?
I am doing well this morning. Seems like to me that the Republicans want to cap prices at hospitals, but those hospitals are pushing back a little bit. What's going on?
Yeah, this wasn't really on my bingo card, but House Speaker Matt Hall is pushing some bills that would mandate price cuts at hospitals and across the board, 10% price cut and creation of a panel to monitor pricing and limiting future price increases to inflation in an effort to cut healthcare costs, which are, of course, very high. The hospitals at a hearing last week pushed back really hard through the Health and Hospital Association. Say that it would push, creating this would push half the state's hospitals into the red, triggered more than $2 billion in losses, cost tens of thousands of jobs, and really hurt rural and independent hospitals, which are getting by the skin of their teeth already, because they'd have weaker bargaining power with insurers. Hall argues that, these are nonprofit hospitals, they're receiving more in tax benefits than they actually pay back in charity care, and they can afford to give back some of their prices. These bills might face a little bit of a rough road, although there are Democrats who signaled they're open to talking about this. You can bet this will be a major fight in Lansing going forward.
So, Chris, I understand also one Metro Detroit retail giant is kind of moving into a home of what one used to occupy.
Yeah, it's a really prominent property in Bloomfield Hills that was long occupied by Taubman Centers, the shopping mall developer that developed 12 Oaks Mall, Great Lakes Crossing, Lakeside, Fairlane, and has slowly been sold and now is completely owned by an Indianapolis company called Simon Property Group, which is the largest shopping mall operator. Their headquarters in Bloomfield Hills has now been purchased and is going to be occupied by Gardner White Furniture, the furniture chain. It's currently based in the old Art Van headquarters in Warren, and has been growing like mad by basically taking over the old failed chains, Art Van, Loves, and now they're taking over some Value City furniture locations after that chain shut down. Gardner White CEO Rachel Stewart said it's a meaningful move, a world-class retail pedigree. Said the Taubman family were longtime mentors. The Taubmans, obviously the mall developer started by Al Taubman. The family has over time sold itself off to Simon Property Group, which still owns Great Lakes Crossing and 12 Oaks Mall. So it's one of the more notable and kind of poignant corporate headquarters moves in Metro Detroit over the last decade.
And Mike, there may be some people against it, but Oakland University, they're going ahead with that plan to build a data center on its campus in Rochester.
Yeah, here we are talking about data centers. Oakland University has been exploring the construction of one on its campus, and they've entered an agreement with the developer for a 20 to 26 megawatt data center. At the board meeting last week, there were plenty of protesters who came out to argue against it. But OU says, the pitch is pretty straightforward. They don't have the computing power they need to function as a university. Researchers, they can't even apply for some government grants because they don't have the computing center that they need. OU is very careful to point out this is not the same thing at all as the hyperscale data centers like the Barn and Saline or the project that's trying to get built in Lyon Township. This is about the size of a parking lot, not the size of a square mile. That didn't really stop the protesters who interrupted the meeting, but the board at OU went right ahead with this developer agreement. They're going to go into due diligence on wrapping up a final deal. And this data center, at least for now, is moving forward.
All right, Mike Lee, Managing Editor, Crane's Detroit Business. You can read these stories and others in the Crane's Detroit Business. Mike, good to talk with you. We'll talk again next week.
You too. Thank you both.
All right. Rev, I got to ask you, I've been in broadcasting for about 40 years now, and I started out really with Martha Jean, the Queen.
Martha Jean Steinberg.
And I know
came from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
WDAO, I believe it is.
Yes, it is.
Station down there.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so you have, contact with Martha
Absolutely.
Jean back in the day?
Absolutely. In fact, both of her daughters are still friends of mine.
Okay.
Cheryl Steinberg, her niece, graduated from high school with me.
Wow.
Dr. Steinberg now. So mm-hmm. I know the family. In fact, we are right next to her on Grand River. We bought the former Gabriel Schott Library.
So you're near the Home of Love?
Yep. Right. Okay. Well, the Home of Love is across the street. The apartment complex and some other stuff
sure.
in the parking lot is right adjacent to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we actually share that parking lot on occasion. We have a great working relationship, as we do with the Merritts, who own Straight Gate and built that.
Yes.
That athletic center, community center across the street. So, yeah, I know her very well. I betcha.
Absolutely.
What was it?
WQBH. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome
Karen
to
Deakins. I remember so many people back to back.
Yes.
Gerald Smith, who will be on, was
was there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think about what she did on the radio, her Inspiration Time broadcast, and how that would play today.
Open up with James Cleveland.
Yes.
But you know what was really funny about her is, and she was loathed by certain men in our community because she would let the wives and the women know that they got an extra check.
She sure
the revenue share was there.
She sure did. She sure did. She would tell you, go down there and make your husband some lunch and go down there and put you some perfume on because they paying out them bonus checks today.
They got that extra money.
She sure did. She sure did. Yeah.
Queens blue collar workers.
Yeah. Yeah. She talked about that. You know, and she was into the casinos for a minute too.
Yeah,
wasn't she
was part of that. I mean, look, she was a formidable force. I mean, just an amazing person. Had political clout, close to Mayor Young. I mean, but to have that radio station, to start as a DJ,
yes,
and then actually own a station was a formidable feat.
And, you know, it was the Queen who got me my first one-on-one sit-down interview with Mayor Coleman Young.
Yeah.
And, you know, that didn't happen.
Well, you know, no, I mean, she was take no prisoners. She was about her business.
Yes, she was.
But she was also as nice as she could be. You know, I mean, if I never worked for her.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know that side of her.
Okay.
I know plenty of people who did. And I always would tell them, I mean, you know, she got where she got because she had to be that kind of way.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing that people expect women to be soft
mm-hmm.
when being soft didn't get her where she wound up, right? So
absolutely.
She had to take care of her business. But on a personal note, I have never, in all the times that I've known her, had anything but fun with her. Of course, she knew my dad, so maybe because she respected my family, but she would always give me tidbits of information and things that, you know, just I thought were of great value.
JR Morning continues after this.
Well, good morning. I'm having a time of my life with Lloyd Jackson. I enjoy radio. I was just sharing with him. I've done a lot of radio over the years. And, of course, been on WJR. I'm glad to know that Ann is now the program director.
She is. Yeah. Very much so. I know you and Ann go back a long way.
Yep.
As the 45th annual March of Dimes Golf Classic tees off today at Indianwood Golf and Country Club in Lake Orion, one Detroit company with more than a century of history is helping lead the way. W.C. Ducom Company has been serving Michigan industry since 1915 and is a presenting sponsor of this year's event, supporting maternal and infant health programs. Joining us this morning is Chris Ducom. He is the president of the Detroit-based company to talk about business, the business community involvement, and why March of Dimes' mission continues to matter. Chris, good morning. It's nice to have you this morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your company was founded in Detroit back in 1915. When you walk through the doors every morning, do you feel the weight of more than a century of history?
Oh, absolutely. When you walk in our main lobby, you'll see four generations of photos up on the wall. And, you know, a lot of the reason why I'm there today is because of my grandmother, who was born in 1920 and passed away at 99 and a half. So there's a long legacy of Ducom history in that building.
Yeah, I am very familiar with that. You know, my daughter's the mayor, and, you know, I inherited my father's work. My grandparents came in 1916.
Wow.
But what does it feel like to craft and create your own sense of who you are in the context of these formidable people who preceded you?
Well, in an ever-changing world, I think that implementing new ways of going to market, you know, but back in the 50s, 60s, you know, 80s, 90s, things were different than they are today with technology advancement, things like that. So, you know, 40 years old, it's the dance is trying to help the company evolve in new times while holding on to our old way of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, for our business, people are doing business with people. So, you know, as much as technology takes and you have to take into account technology, you still have to hold true to that service model.
Talk about what W.C. Ducom does. What is it and what does it do?
Well, we are a stocking distributor of power transmission components. We sell bearings, sprockets, chain, motors, and a lot of industrial equipment machine parts. And the niche we've carved out for our business is to work with OEMs. So if you go into a automotive plant, for example, you know, we have nothing to do with the components that go onto the vehicles. But if you look at the the conveyance and assembly line machines that help build the cars, a lot of the parts that we've distributed to companies local in Detroit are on those machines. So our parts go onto the machines that help the cars get made.
So you mentioned this kind of convergence of maintaining a personal touch with also understanding what the market trends are or moving to that next dimension. Where do you see yourself? You've been 100 years. Where do you see yourself in the next 100 years and your legacy?
Oh, goodness. That's a great question.
Go ahead.
Well, there's six cousins at my level, and all but two have our own kids. So when I see my kids, I don't know, whatever it is they want to do, but there's certainly a need for the parts that we sell and stock and distribute. So if they want to carry the torch, they're more than welcome. It's there for them to take if they'd like.
Yeah, I just want to commend you, by the way, for being in Detroit all this time. And I guess my question, are you heartened by what you see? I mean, just 30 years ago, the last person leaving Detroit turned off the lights, and look where we are now.
Yeah, our company's location has stood the test of time. I wasn't around in the early 90s. I know in the 60s we were going to move. Detroit was seeing some tough times in the mid 60s, and history will show that there was a death in the family. My grandfather died at 48 years old, and he was actually going to move, and my grandmother made the hard decision to stay. And we've been there since, and we feel lucky that nothing has taken us out of the city, because to maintain our business in Detroit for over 100 years is it's prideful.
Yeah, and puts you probably in the minority too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it does in a sense. Yeah, we're the last remaining distributor in the city of Detroit.
Chris, I got to ask you about the 45th annual March of Dimes Golf Classic. What does it say about this community that people continue to support this event, decade after decade?
Yeah, it's been over three decades. My uncle managed to get involved with March of Dimes early on, and our family friend and president from 2015 until 2020, Jim LaHaye, carried the torch with a wonderful woman named Jamie Mitchell. And we've been, what's nice is I took it over back when I first started at the company. We had maybe 25 golfers and raised about 10,000-15,000. And we're now up to somewhere between 25 and 30,000 every year and bring 50 golfers. So our involvement is, more or less doubled since I started. And it's every year after year, we see a commitment from our suppliers and from our customers. And it's one of the events I look forward to most every year.
I think it's difficult, unfortunately, to get people to look beyond themselves. And while you have to run the day-to-day to still have that sense of benevolence, what motivates you to want to assist this particular charity?
It's the same as motivating me to maintain our business at that company, right? It's a legacy. It's legacy. My uncle was very, very passionate. And, he didn't tell his friends, customers, and suppliers that they should contribute. He demanded it. And so I've taken that on and continue to do the same, right? So it's a legacy for the family, for my uncle.
And, at the end of the day, Chris, what would make you say that this year's March of Dimes Golf Classic was truly a success, not just financially, but also personally?
Personally, I want to see everybody come out and have a good day. Everybody say they had a nice experience, enjoy the course and enjoy the cause. What March of Dimes does for babies and for moms and the hospital setting, the programs that they deploy nationwide. It's nice to come out and play some golf, but it's nice to know that you came out to play some golf for a cause that makes a difference.
Well, I just want to thank you for what you're doing. I think it's commendable. I'm glad to know you're in the city all these years. But you've gone, I hate to be this pun, but you've gone from making parts to playing a part.
That's very nice of you to say. And yeah, we've been in the city and we're proud of that. And anytime you're driving by, please come see us.
All right. Chris Ducombe is president of WC Ducombe Company. We appreciate you being here and appreciate you being a presenting sponsor for the 45th annual March of Dimes Golf Classic at Indian Wood Golf and Country Club today. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
You as well. Coming up, we'll be talking to the organizing director of Daybo Detroit, in Chantel Watkins. I'm sure you know who she is.
Know a lot about her. In more ways than one.
All right, we're going to talk about that. But first, it's Eye on Engineering, brought to you by Tejan Automotive Technologies, the formula for better mobility.
Hey, I'm Reverend Sheffield. I'm the co-host here today. I'm honored, man. This is the dream position, WGR 760 AM with Lloyd Jackson, indomitable, incomparable voice of the early morning show from 6 to 9. It is my pleasure to introduce a young lady that has offered much to our organization, Chantel Watkins, who is the organizing director of Daybo Detroit. Welcome, Chantel Watkins.
Good morning, y'all. Good morning.
Wake up. That's not the voice I'm used to.
I'm as up as I'm going to be, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, just kind of give us an idea of all the things you've organized from actually organizing that community. You know, most recently we closed down an establishment that was taking stolen property from neighborhood homes. Just kind of give us a quick rundown.
Yes, so I've been blessed to be the organizing director at Daybo Detroit, and I have the pleasure of working with not only the McKenzie Noble community, but Daybo's wide, vast network. We really work to not only make sure that the people who are in Detroit and around Detroit are represented when it comes to all of our elected officials, but to also make sure that people feel safe in their neighborhoods. So most recently, there was a business that was on Grand River in Wyoming that was stealing people's hot water heaters and copper pipes out their houses and stuff. And we had a meeting where our police department came, our elected officials came, over 60 people from the neighborhood came, gave their testimonies, gave their proof, and we were able to permanently shut down that business because we really worked hard to do so. So it was great to have the neighborhood show up, but know that they could show up safely and that we could actually do something about it.
Rev, I want to ask you, because I know Daybo has been around since 1979, but the story really begins with your dad. And
yeah,
I just like to let people kind of know how that began.
Well, my dad was a firm believer in organization. So, you know, we have all these organizations in our community all professing to save us as the people, but we're still lost, as you would say. Mm-hmm. And so the difference between a pile of bricks and a cathedral is organization. So he put together this organization, met with many black organizations, and formed the Detroit Association of Black Organizations. We've had a great history. We opened and oversaw the funding for the first two school-based health clinics in the Detroit public schools, created Metropolitan Detroit Anti-Crime Coalition, and we've just had just a broad scope of things that we've addressed. But, yeah, it all began by my dad. Mm.
And Chantel, you know, talk about some of the biggest concerns you're hearing from Detroit residents right now that, you know, Daybo is looking into dealing with.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things is a lot of people feel siloed and that they can't get and connect to different services. So we meet those things. So whenever you call our office, shameless plug, 313-491-0003, people can get connected with services that help them keep their properties by helping them with their property taxes, keeping their lights on, having connections with people directly to our city council members or our mayor's office, finding out what they can do for home repairs. There are a lot of people who live in the city, who have lived in the city for 50, 60 years, and they don't know where those services are. So Daybo is really the glue and the pieces that keep Detroiters not only in Detroit, but to go from just like surviving to thriving.
Yeah, so Chantel's created a plethora of new programs that, you know, I didn't dream of. One of which is very impactful and successful is the free store. I mean, that's an anathema, free store. Tell us all about that.
Yes, so the last Saturday of every month, so we just had it this past Saturday, we have a free store from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. where people literally get to shop. Each individual gets up to 10 items. We had everything. We had braiding hair, dog food, bikes, all types of stuff at this store, and it really brings dignity back in the community. So I saw a need because I would see all these people coming to like our breakfast at the wake up call or coming to the Bridge Center, but I would see them in like the same clothes and shoes. And I'm like, there's tons of people who are always asking me where they can donate new and gently used things. We literally created this store, and it brings dignity to folks because sometimes people are just giving you things, and these people get to shop.
All right, we got to wrap up. We got to take a break. We appreciate that. 313-491-0003. Be right back after this.
All right, Chantel Watkins, Organizing Director at Daybo. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to the CFO of Daybo. Also, Stephanie Worth with the March of Dimes coming up as well. And Gerald Smith. He is president of GW Smith and Associates. And Gerald, me and him go back a long way. I know he goes back a long way. Yeah. We do, Reverend.
Yeah, we do. I mean, we will have to sing that song with Change the Gender, Me and You, Girl.
Okay.
Go a long way back.
Oh, definitely, definitely. More JR Morning with the Reverend Horace Sheffield here on 760 WJR.
Welcome back, WJR, 760 AM. I'm the co-host here, the guest co-host, auditioning to be the regular host.
Just put that,
Ann Thompson's phone number. You know, she's the station manager now, a good friend of mine with, of course, Lloyd Jackson. Offered me this opportunity. I'm extremely grateful. We got another guest that I asked to come on the show. She's the chief operating officer of Daybo
Detroit.
She'll
be coming on at...
Oh, I'm sorry, 7-9. So,
7-19.
So now it's you and us. We whip
just me. We,
me
we
and
whipping
you.
Around.
You and me. Yeah.
Listen, I just got to let everyone know to be careful because that heat is
the
coming,
weather.
Reverend.
Yeah, yeah.
The heat is coming, and it's going to be some dangerous heat. They're talking about 100 degrees.
I thought I heard 104.
Yeah.
By the way, we do have water available at Daybo
okay.
on Grand River, Wyoming, to give out free courtesy of DTE.
Mm-hmm.
So come get some water between 9 and 5. It's absolutely free. But, yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Got to be careful.
Drink plenty of water throughout the
and
day.
And especially people like me who at almost 72
uh-huh.
feel no different than I did at 22.
Okay.
But every now and then my body
lets you know. Listen, Reverend, I know what you say. I know how you
feel. I'm not jumping off of nothing, and probably not jumping into nothing.
Oh, man. You know, doctors and officials also stress recognizing the warning signs of heat illness. You know, heat exhaustion can bring, you know, nausea, some heavy sweating, clammy skin, and heat stroke marked by high body temperature and hot skin is a medical emergency that requires a 911 call. So
I went through that one time. I was working years ago when I was playing football in college for Wayne County Road Commission.
Okay.
Oh. And they had me on the expressway busting up concrete.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 100 degrees. And all of a sudden, I started seeing like starbursts, blurred vision.
Oh, wow.
You know, loss of the ability to maintain my stability. And they said it was... potentially could have been a heat stroke.
Wow.
People know you can have a heat stroke.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing to play with.
Well, and I think, too, we got to, you know, look out for our workers who work outside. There are a lot of workers who that's what they do.
Well, don't get me started on that. if it's too hot to go out, you shouldn't be working.
No, you shouldn't.
Especially, I don't know how people work in these factories and places like that. In this kind of torrid heat.
Yeah, well, and if you see a roofer or you see someone out there working, if you have some water, you know, offer them some water out there.
And if you're a wife and you love to see your husband sweat in the garden, give him a break this week.
Absolutely. Detroit Lions cornerback Terrion Arnold scheduled for a pretrial detention hearing this morning in Tampa where prosecutors will argue he should be held in jail without bond in connection with that February armed robbery and kidnapping case. He's 23 years old. He faces multiple felony charges, including 3 counts of kidnapping, 3 counts of armed robbery, and conspiracy-related charges. Prosecutors allege he coordinated and directed a violent home invasion involving multiple victims who were allegedly beaten, held at gunpoint, and forced to leave their property. Investigators say that the case includes cell phone evidence, co-defendant testimony, allegations that the incident was streamed live during the crime. 6 co-defendants have also been charged with all previously denied bond. Arnold has denied any involvement through his attorney and representatives, calling the allegations untrue and saying he looks forward to his day in court. A judge is expected to rule on the detention within 24 hours of today's hearing.
Yeah, this has escalated. You know, at one point it seemed as if maybe they didn't have the evidence, and he skated for a while. But, I mean, I don't understand how anyone in a position like that, as I mentioned off air, yeah. who goes through all of that to get there, risk it all.
Risk it all, yeah.
For something like that. It's just insane. And, you know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, there's no differentiation between me and him or anyone else. I mean, when you engage in that kind of criminal enterprise, you're going to pay the price.
Absolutely.
And now he's, you know, he's even if he beats it.
Still tainted a little.
It's tainted. And yeah. whether or not he could ever have a career in the NFL again, he's made NFL real, not for long.
Mm. A longtime Northwest Detroit landmark getting new life as the former Rogale Golf Course officially been transformed into a 98-acre public park. The site, which dates back to before World War I, was closed and sold in years leading up to the city's financial crisis, later changing hands before Detroit reacquired the land back in 2018. Now it features paved walk paths and boardwalks and four scenic overlooks and nearly a mile of trail that will eventually connect to the Rouge River Greenway. City leaders say the redevelopment also included environmental cleanup to address chemicals left behind from decades of golf course maintenance. Alongside the park, 19 acres will be developed into 304 units of mixed-income housing and commercial space as part of a broader $98 million project led by Detroit Blightbusters and Wallet Communities. Officials say the goal is to boost recreation, housing, and long-term investment in Northwest Detroit neighborhoods.
Well, you know, that property was owned by Greater Grace at one point. I'm old enough to remember that. Of course, the golf course, we also operated on 7 Mile and Woodward.
That's right.
I'd love to see something similar to that over in my neighborhood because it's just sitting there undeveloped. I drive by there all the time. I said, why does somebody build like some half-million-dollar homes here?
Right.
You know, when I was a kid, you went to Palmer Park.
That's right.
And you'd catch tadpoles, you know, for science classes. So it's a wonderful thing. You know, one of the things that's happening is there's just a rush and a demand and developers coming here from everywhere to build housing. One of the problems we have is making certain that housing is affordable.
Yes.
Because obviously with having positive population growth again, there are people who want to live here and live in the creme de la creme, but we ought to also build housings that make certain that the people who never left get to stay.
Coming up at 7:19, we'll be speaking with the CFO of Daybo.
COO.
The CO, okay. It's the COO of Daybo, Dr. Kenyatta Snap, coming up at 7:19. But first, it's time for WJR's Business Beat. It's brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
All right, WJR 768 AM broadcasting live in the Fisher Building in Midtown. With I'm the co-host. He's the host. I'm about to say with my co-host.
That's okay. That's
Lloyd
all right.
Jackson, pleasure to be
you
here.
In the big chair today.
How about that, man? I'm going to get me an agent after this. All right, we're blessed to have Dr. Kenyatta Snap with us, who's the Chief Operating Officer of Daybo Detroit. Welcome to the show, Dr. Snap.
Good morning, Reverend. How are you?
I'm good. So we have really developed a robust workforce development program at Daybo Detroit, blessed to be funded with some money from Amazon, from Gilbert Family Foundation. Kind of tell us what we're trying to do with people who really need to be able, by the way, with rising rents, to also have more competitive pay.
So what we're looking to do, it's an economic mobility initiative. And really we're trying to drive the opportunity for individuals to connect to work, to be able to be equipped with better skills, and really just help Detroiters out, because we understand that it's not only a wage gap, it's a skill gap, and so we're hoping to fill that.
Doctor, you know, people hear the title Chief operating officer and think about logistics and administrative strategy. But at an organization like Daybo Detroit, you know, your role is really deeply tied to the people. And sometimes people see operational strategy and grassroots community advocacy as two different worlds. But how do you how do those two areas kind of intersect to make real social change possible?
So the social change happens because we don't only want things to look good on paper. We want things to look good on people. And so we endeavor to be all things to all people according to their needs. And everybody, from the person that's at the front desk to the CEO to the COO, really work to make sure that we make that happen.
That's very interesting. You know, you know you got the right person when they start quoting you. Just kind of sneak stuff in. All things to all people according to their need. I got that from Roy Kelvin Nichols, first African-American bishop in United Methodist Church. Placed me at Bethel United Methodist Church at 21 years of age.
Wow.
And that was his adage. That was his thing. There's no reason for us to ever turn anyone away. So when you talk about that, Dr. Snapp, kind of give us a vertical slice. And by the way, kudos to Gilbert Family Foundation, which also enables us to be able to fund the college fair where people get free scholarships. But if you had to give a vertical slice, just walk us down that street and what those services look like.
Sure. So it is an integrated workforce and academic ecosystem. And we are combining industry-recognized training, career navigation, health support through Premier Quality Health, employer partnerships, and entrepreneurship. So if a person comes in, immediately they are assessed for our intake process. We determine whether or not those individuals have deeper needs beyond what they're coming in for. So it could be workforce ecosystem, but it could just be something to eat. And once they receive that support, we then give them a soft handoff. They will either go to WCCC. They could potentially go into one of the other career and vocational tracks. They could also get their GED. We assist with utility assistance. We also assist with making sure that throughout the tenure or time with us, we're able to support that person with all of the needs that he or she needs to go from a place of crisis to sustainability and self-sufficiency in that space.
I know, Dr. Snapp, Daybo has been serving Detroit since 1979, started by the Reverend Horace Sheffield's father, Horace Sheffield Jr., who was an automaker, a journalist, a labor leader, a broadcaster, a civil rights advocate. What part of that legacy speaks to you personally?
I would say all of it. I think that Horace Sheffield II is a pillar and really in terms of a person that wants to really get into social justice, but a person who wants to get into leadership and agency and advocacy for the people. It's definitely one to be studied, not just in the city of Detroit, but really could be a class that could be held to help show people and position them to be better leaders for people in society.
I think one of the things that people miss is we can be an organization that advocates for people of color and intercede for them, but also build relationships with all kinds of communities, all kinds of segments. Can you kind of talk about the broad scope of the interactiveness between us and others to actually improve the life of the folks that come to us?
You know, Rev, I'm thinking back during COVID when the Arab community would only come to Daybo to get their COVID shots. And they bypassed so many other agencies, but they came to the West Side, little small building on Grand River, because they trusted us. And one of the things that I think we do well is building trust in the community, not just for Black people, but for other people of color. And we've had a few white folks to come in too, to get the same support, because they get to get it with dignity. They get to get it in a place that is personable, and they get to get it in a place that shows true care.
And Dr. Snapp, you know, how important is it to engage our young folks, our young Detroiters in community leadership and civic involvement to ensure that Daybo's work continues for another 40 years?
I would say another 140 years.
Just do it.
Just do it. I think it's important to engage the youth because ultimately we have to build the capacity around them and engage them in the space help them understand why this work matters and why they matter, so that we can have longevity in this book of work, and so that the needs of the community won't just stop with Horace L. Sheffield III, but will continue. So to build some additional leaders to come behind him is something that's going to be optimal so that we can continue to thrive in this city.
Well, just to wrap it up real quick, you mentioned Premier Quality. Talk about our health, our mobile health. We got about maybe a minute because we do also provide free health services.
We provide 100% free health services through our partnership with Premier Quality Health, led by family nurse practitioner Isha Price. 100% free health. We don't ask any other. And we provide. Persons can come inside of the clinic and get free health care.
Right. And then we have a mobile thing that Kenyatta also assists with, where we actually have mobile health, where Isha and our other medical professionals go out to senior buildings, to community centers, and provide those same services. So,
Dr. Kenyatta Snap, thank you so much for being here on JR Morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. And coming up, the 45th Annual March of Dimes Golf Classic at Indianwood Golf and Country Club is today, and we'll be speaking with the Executive Director of Market Impact for the March of Dimes, Stephanie Wirth. That's next at 7:35 on JR Morning.
Well, good morning. Wake up, everybody. It's 7:37, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. I'm the guest co-host with Lloyd Jackson. Lloyd, we got up now.
Yeah, the mission of the March of Dimes, Reverend, is clear and urgent to lead the fight for the health of all moms and babies by ending preventable maternal health risk and deaths, preventing preterm births and infant loss, and closing the health equity gap. It's a mission that comes to life through research and education and advocacy and community events held throughout the year, including the 45th Annual March of Dimes Golf Classic at Indianwood Golf and Country Club in Lake Orion. And joining us is Stephanie Wirth, Executive Director of Market Impact for the March of Dimes. Talk about that mission, the work happening on the ground, and how listeners can make a difference through awareness and support. Stephanie, it's always nice to talk with you. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Lloyd. Good morning, Reverend Sheffield. Really happy to be with you this morning.
You know, when you talk about the mission of the March of Dimes, ending preventable maternal health risk and preventing preterm birth and closing the health equity gap, what does that actually look like in real families day to day?
What I'd like people to remember is beyond the statistics, these are babies and mothers at risk. And I think far too many of us know someone who has suffered a miscarriage, lost a baby. There are fathers who've gone to delivery rooms and not returned with the mothers. And so I really want people to get beyond the statistics and understand that 1 in 10 preterm babies is just too many. That means the baby was born early. The baby could have lifelong effects that affect their ability to learn, to join a productive society. They could have additional birth defects. There are moms who, you know, don't have access to proper care. And in Detroit, very often that doesn't look like there's not a nearby hospital, right? Because Detroit happens to be a transportation desert more than anything, which can prevent someone who's 8 months pregnant from being able to get to a doctor appointment. So really, I want people to kind of look out for each other in that village aspect of making sure that people have proper access to care, that they are taking care of themselves as best they can, that they have access to resources and to information, which can help them have healthier pregnancies and healthier birth outcomes.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I am good. How are you, Reverend Sheffield?
Wonderful. We've done a lot of great work together. I think it becomes maybe more difficult with organizations like March of Dimes. Just like I had this conversation with United Way about the old torch drive campaigns, which used to be in our classrooms. Do you think it's more difficult now with those kind of legacy organizations to really gin up support and get people to understand that you're still there, you're still as vital, as needed as ever?
Absolutely, and I think one of the challenges of being an 88-year-old organization is that we are not boots on the ground in the sense that some people might expect. We're not necessarily handing out diapers, although we have wonderful partners in the Sisters of Zeta Phi Beta and their Stork's Nest sites. What March of Dimes has done through the years and continues to do is foundational difference. That means we're out there advocating for legislative changes that allow all moms to have something like telehealth, or to ensure that doctors get reimbursed when we're telling moms that them and their babies need vaccines. It's some of that background foundational work that allows other organizations to do the work that they do. And our research over the years has been critical. Something, for example, like newborn screening, Reverend Sheffield, that people take for granted. Your baby is born, they get a heel prick, that blood gets sent off. That is something that March of Dimes played a critical role in, and every baby in Michigan benefits from that, and it saves hundreds of thousands of babies' lives every year because it predicts chronic illnesses and birth defects. And that's just one of those things that people don't understand that we do.
Stephanie, I want to ask you about the 45th annual March of Dimes Golf Classic, which is happening today at the historic Indian Wood Golf and Country Club. You know, these kinds of events, you know, they bring together business leaders and community members and advocates. How powerful is that kind of cross-sector support?
It is immensely powerful, especially when you consider that someone like our, our presenting sponsor, Ducombe, W.C. Ducombe Company, they are involved in this and have been involved for this many, many years because they're what we call mission affected. There was someone in the family who was born with a birth defect, and that heavily impacted the family and made them want to get involved. And they have been our presenting sponsor for many, many years, but they are touched by this mission every single day. So the opportunity to bring men and women together on the course and talk business and talk about their families. Guy Gordon, who has been our co-chair for many years, participates not because he has children or grandchildren with birth defects, but specifically because he has healthy children and realizes what a gift that is. So it's very powerful when people are able to come together and talk and to support the organization on a day like this.
So you have a great chair who we spoke with, been in the city since the early 1900s, and there's a golf classic where you're raising money. How else can people contribute who can't play golf today but want to do something based on what they've heard?
Well, you can go to our website, www.marchofdimes.org/Detroit, and you can donate there. You can learn more about the work that we do. And you can also mark your calendar for November 5th. We're having our first Black Ties for Babies Gala at the Colony Club in Detroit. And certainly, if you can't participate in the golf outing today, we invite you to come out to the gala or to donate whatever you can any particular time.
And before I go, you know, I just got to ask you, Stephanie, what gives you the most hope right now when you think about the future of moms and babies in this country?
That there are people who are passionately supporting this mission. And that's not just the employees at March of Dimes, but that's people in the community. That's hospitals that we collaborate with. That's fraternities and sororities who recently came out to March for Babies a couple of weeks ago. Shout out to Zeta Phi Beta, which raised $37,000 for the activity. So I know that there are thousands of people in Michigan who support the work, and that's how the work is going to continue.
Stephanie Wirth, Executive Director of Market Impact for the March of Dimes. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday.
Thank you for having me.
And full transparency, Reverend, I worked with Stephanie Wirth about 40 years ago. She was part of Mason and Company, yeah. John Mason.
I've known her for years as well. And another matter is my wife is Zeta Phi Beta.
Oh,
who is the nurse practitioner that runs Premier Quay. So I'm glad to know that they're doing that kind of work.
Absolutely. Coming up at 7:49, sir, we have Gerald Smith. We both know this man
Gerald
as well.
Gerald W. Smith.
Yes.
Back-to-back fame. And by the way, public television, American Black Journal.
Absolutely.
On PBS.
Yes, and worked for Comcast.
And now he is my media producer.
All right, we will talk with Gerald Smith coming up at 7:49. But first, Michigan summers, you know, mean outdoor adventure and fun. But these high temperatures that we're going to be getting this week, well, they could break your budget. Count on Consumers Energy to help you make the most of this season and your budget with tips and ways to save. Making small changes like shifting energy use to the morning or evening, raising your thermostat a couple of degrees, and Maybe doing laundry at night or on the weekends can help lower your bill while keeping your home comfortable. Discover more ways to beat the heat at consumersenergy.com/summer.
All right, we're back live in the living color here at WGI 960 AM, and I'm sitting in as the co-host.
760.
760. What did I say, 730?
You said 960.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's why I've never won the lottery. Can't get them numbers right. But I got to host right.
Yes, you
and
do.
That's Lloyd Jackson. And
yes.
We're blessed to be joined by someone that I've known for many years, been in radio. QBH back to back.
Oh yes,
was his show, which was a very popular show in the day,
mm-hmm.
And of course was the host of American Black Journal on PBS for years, and vice president of Comcast, and really led to the expansion of his acquisition and his community involvement, and that is the indomitable and incomparable Gerald W. Smith.
Good morning. Good morning, Reverend Sheffield and Lloyd Jackson.
Yeah, good morning, brother.
Now, I waited all these years because he did so much for me to elevate him in this genre of radio and TV. So now he is the producer of the Wake Up Call on TV and radio.
On Saturdays, yeah.
On Saturdays, yeah.
All right.
Why don't you start?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm just jumping the gun here. But let me just say this real quick.
Yeah.
And speaking of Black Journal, we lost a mentor and a trailblazing figure in media industry, and that was Tony Brown.
Yes.
Recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to pay tribute to him as the creator of Black Journal, which was the longest running series in the history of PBS, over 40 years, starting here in Detroit and then migrating out to New York and beyond. So I just want to pay tribute to a great man, historic figure in media, and particularly as it relates to the Black community.
Sure. Well, that's what Gerald does. I mean, Gerald kind of makes certain that whatever he wants to have happen on the show happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he always gives me these, you know, looks like, okay, this is what we ought to be talking about. But Gerald, tell us about our platform and what makes it different. And while I wanted to have you on so people would know that, you know, we really have this community engagement that's awesome.
Thanks, Rev. And let me just preface my remarks by saying, Lloyd, you are with talking about platitudes, right? Reverend Sheffield is more than just a minister. I mean, he is a trailblazing civil rights leader. I mean, his actions in this community, you know, obviously is worth mentioning. But it also relates to why he brought me out of my fourth retirement. and that had to do with expanding his communications platform in the formation of what's being called the Detroit Community Network, DCN, which is a medium designed to deliver local community-based news programming, which is archival programming, as well as freshly produced programming complemented by an up-to-date community calendar. So with all that being said, a part of this network that's being formulated is his Wake Up Call broadcast, in which I produce it, in which he mentioned, which is a popular Metro Detroit weekly live program, radio program hosted by Rev Sheffield and friends, and features newsmakers, public policy figures, community change agents, and cultural entertainers that are making a difference both locally and nationally. And let me give you an example.
But by the way, can I get that copy too? Can you send that copy to me? DC and our news and our views. Go right here, Gerald. Gerald's going to be the best prepared.
I know that. Oh, 100%. Always is.
I just want to mention, talking about preparedness, some of the folks that we've been profiled as guests on the Wake Up Call radio broadcast has been Judge Greg Mathis, the radio icon and BET host Donnie Simpson, Reverend Jamal Bryant, the native Detroiter Dr. Michael Eyre Dyson, Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. We even had the executive director, Lloyd, mm-hmm. of the NBA Foundation, Erica Swilly, on. So that gives you some idea, notwithstanding the local grassroots leadership and corporate leadership that we've been able to bring to the airwaves on the Wake Up Call.
Gerald, you know, I know you're known for strategic planning and event management. What does a successful strategy look like when you're working with community-focused organizations?
Well, it's always about doing your homework. You know, as you well know, the backstory is the story. You know, and how to formulate strategies, research, research, research. I keep telling folks all the time, I'm a prolific reader. You know, I read, just like Reverend Sheffield, we read, I don't care what it is, just to really formulate the knowledge base that gives people, and myself personally, the opportunity to interact with folks. You got to come prepared, as you just mentioned, and be able to listen. People don't listen today. People need to absorb what people are saying in order to formulate strategies that will enable change to happen within ourselves as well as within the community.
Yeah, you mentioned reading, and that was something that Lloyd mentioned, that he gets up the night before,
yes,
the early morning of,
mm-hmm,
and that's such an important dimension. I just think it's important for people to know the tenor and tone of my show. We don't attack anyone. I've had ML Eric on.
Yeah.
I think having a form of people can hear different ideas, and to take issue with issues, not pick with the personality. Can you talk, Gerald, about how deliberate we are about that and how comfortable people feel coming to our location, which we have a live breakfast, by the way.
Biscuits, grits, and salmon croquettes. If that doesn't start your morning off, Lloyd, I don't know what will.
Yeah, that'll do it.
By the way, Lloyd's agreed to come over and be on our show.
Absolutely.
We'll make him a guest host one Saturday.
Okay, let's do it.
That'll be great. You know, what separates us, I guess, from other broadcasts, notwithstanding your radio show here, Lloyd, is the fact that, you know, we bring people in, they feel comfortable. We prepare our co-hosts, notwithstanding, not to be confrontational, but to be informational. This program is all about, you know, disseminating information that people need in the community, whether it's in healthcare, you know, whether, you know, it's in education. I mean, all the genres of life, you know, this show, this program, or this broadcast, as I would like to call it, you know, gives people the opportunity to absorb information that they wouldn't ordinarily get with other mediums.
Gerald Smith, President G.W. Smith and Associates, thank you so much for being with us. We go back a long way. I know you go back
G.W.
with the Reverend as well, and it's just, yeah, a pleasure to know that you're still out there doing what you do, and you do it well.
And
thank you so much.
And he still cracks a whip, by
the way. Oh, I know. Yes, he does. He wants it right, and that's the way we want it, too. Thank you, Gerald.
And by the way, you'd be pleased to know Raven's shaking her head. Yes, he does.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you. Thank
okay,
you so right. much.
Talk to you soon.
Take care now.
Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we'll be speaking with James White, President and CEO of the Detroit Integrated Health Network, Detroit Wayne Integrated Health Network. Also, Detroit City Councilman Denzel McCampbell and the Wayne County Treasurer, Eric Sabree, will join us as well. That's all coming up in the 8 o'clock hour on 760 WJR.
Welcome back, WJR 760 AM. I am the celebrity co-host sitting in with Lloyd Jackson.
Good to have you here, Rev. I appreciate it. Here's your chance, though, to win a trip to see two country superstars, Jason Aldean and Luke Bryan, in Vegas. Double the hits, one forgettable night. We've got your flights, your hotel, your concert tickets. It's all covered. The Double Down Tour, Aldean and Bryan co-headlining with special guest John Party and Chase Matthews, all live under the neon lights. The prize is provided by BBR Music Group. Text this hour's national keyword, RIDE, to 95819. That's RIDE to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Official rules and more info at WJR.com. Rev, what are we going to do about this heat coming up this week?
Well, we're going to stay in the air.
That's all we could do.
Going to buttress the bottom line of DTE.
Mm, yeah.
Are we ready for our chief?
Not yet. That's coming up at
8:19. I gotta read.
But
one thing I'm not gonna do, I'm not gonna walk around in my bikini swimsuit.
You're not going? No Speedos for you?
No, I'm gonna just
okay.
Turn my air down a little bit and enjoy. Uh-huh. I've got central air everywhere.
Okay, very good, yeah. Very good. Because you're going to need it. Because Many doctors are saying that you need to make sure you drink plenty of water throughout the day, wear light clothing, avoid strenuous outdoor activity during peak afternoon heat. And you got to recognize heat illness as well, because you can be out and you can have heat exhaustion, which can bring nausea and heavy sweating and clammy skin and heat stroke. That's marked by high body temperature and hot skin. That's a medical emergency. You got to call 911 if you're going through heat
stroke. I think the effect is the same as any other kind of stroke. So you don't want to play with the heat.
No, you definitely don't. Also, the United States and Iran have agreed to pause attacks on each other, according to a senior U.S. official, as both sides prepare for high-level talks tomorrow in Qatar, focused on easing tensions over the Straits of Hormuz. The agreement comes after an 11-day ceasefire that has already shown signs of strain, with renewed strikes and conflicting interpretations of recent memorandum of understanding. U.S. officials say both sides have agreed to stop kinetic activity for now, allowing commercial vessels to move more freely through the strategic waterway. The ceasefire deal includes commitments for safe passage of ships and ease restrictions, but key details, including a proposed military hotline, that's still not fully in place.
Yeah, it sounds like a couple that fights all the time says we're not going to fight because it's date night.
Oh, yeah, that's what it, yeah, that's what
I mean, the Friends
like.
Of Distinction, you got me going in circles. This is crazy, man, just absolutely absurd. And what I don't understand is how you bomb a place like that and then want to give them 300
million.
Right. Mm-hmm. To rebuild.
$300 billion.
It's crazy. But yet we have people in Detroit who can't afford roofs who've been paying property taxes for 50 years, and they have to put blue tarps on their roof. When you land in the metro, you think you're in the Caribbean.
Yeah, I see them. Yeah, absolutely. Hundreds of parishioners gathered yesterday for a final mass at Our Lady Queen of Heaven in Detroit, marking the end of an era for a historic parish in the Archdiocese of Detroit's ongoing restructuring plan. For many longtime members, the church was more than just a building. It was a spiritual home filled with decades of memories. And parishioners described the final service as emotional and difficult as they reflected on dwindling attendance and the reality that the closure had become unavoidable. Starting July 1st, the church will no longer be used as a Catholic worship site. The archdiocese says the parish will continue in a new form, with St. Raymond serving as the main parish church and St. Jude handling select services. The closure, part of a broader two-year restructuring effort aimed at reducing the number of parishes across Southeast Michigan.
I'd pray for a miracle, you know, to come tomorrow and find water on the floor. There's a spring of water straight from the Lord.
Well, let's pray for that miracle.
I'm just saying, you know, relics. I mean, these things really draw people.
They do.
I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what we do, Lord, to get people back in church except become more Christ-like. Mm. The problem that people have in the pews is that we love Jesus and can't stand anybody else. And it's tragic because there's such a disconnect between who Jesus was and who we are.
Yes.
If we could just figure that out. Which, by the way, is the work of the Holy Spirit, not clapping hands.
Shouting.
Right. I mean, that's the work of the Holy Spirit, to become more Christ-like. Then I think those circles of believers, those places where we gather, take on a whole nother dimension.
And speaking of water, another water main rupture in Metro Detroit has renewed urgent calls to fix the region's aging infrastructure. A major break in Northeast Oakland County recently forced 200,000 residents and local businesses to restrict water use for days. It's the latest in a string of ruptures plaguing Metro Detroit, including similar breaks in Novi and Southwest Detroit. Now, the Great Lakes Water Authority says the issue stems from defective 1970s-era concrete pipes. But fixing the problem comes with a pretty steep price tag. GLEWA officials say full replacement would cost $1.6 billion. That's B, billion dollars, money the authority simply does not have. Now, GLEWA uses advanced technology to monitor pipe conditions. Critics and state lawmakers warn quelling future disasters will ultimately require some sustained federal and state funding.
Yeah, well, the problem, though, is that the cost of the water loss is passed on to us.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is, and I think the city of Detroit has done something to help remedy this. If you live in Detroit, you keep getting these notices about your water lines need to be replaced.
Yes.
Our water lines are old. If you look at the quality of water, I mean, the Detroit Public Schools at one point took water fountains out of their schools.
They sure did, yes.
Because of the level of contamination in the water. lead,
mm-hmm.
those kind of things. By the way, you know, the most two prevalent behaviors or impacts of lead poisoning in water, however, is lack of attentiveness and aggression.
Yes.
So if you're drinking water that has lead in it, you're acting crazy and you ain't learning nothing.
The Red Wings have added a new offensive weapon in the 2026 draft, selecting left wing J.P. Hurlbut with the 23rd overall pick. Hurlbut, he's an 18-year-old from Allen, Texas, most recently played for the Kamloops Blazers in the Western Hockey League, where he posted an impressive 42 goals, 97 points in 68 games. The season before, he competed with the U.S. National Development Team, adding 31 points in 34 games. After taking Hurlbut in the first round, Detroit continued building depth throughout the draft, selecting six more players across multiple positions. And the Tigers wrapped up their 10-game homestand with a 7-5 loss to the Houston Astros yesterday at Comerica Park as late-inning bullpen struggles once again proved costly. Detroit held a 3-run lead late, but the Astros stormed back with home runs in the 7th and 8th innings before breaking the game open with 4 runs off Kenley Jensen in the 10th. So,
well, here's the thing about sports. I mean, you can enjoy the game and great athletic competition, but you judge by whether you win or lose.
That's the bottom line.
It was a good game, but they lost.
Coming up at 8:19, we'll be speaking with James White. He's president and CEO of the Detroit Wayne Integrated Health Network. We'll talk to him about what's going on with them. And they have a new building, Reverend, that they're building right there around 7 Mile in Greenfield. That's going to be a place where people can go. They can get help 24/7.
Yes, yeah.
And it's going to really be give a big relief to the jails, especially Wayne County.
Well, D. Wynn, who I work with, is a bridge over troubled waters. I tell my pastor friends who want to lay hands on folks, it's prayer plus. We have people who need intervention, who need counseling, who need medication, who are in crisis. And D. Wynn is bar none, at the top of that in terms of being able to access the help that people need when they're in those situations.
The CEO of DWIN is next on JR Morning.
All right, welcome back to WJR 760 AM. I am the celebrity guest host. I'm the most.
Sitting in the big chair today.
Here with Lloyd Jackson, the indomitable and incomparable Lloyd Jackson. Listen, I had the pleasure at 13 years of age to be the paperboy for Ray Girardin, who was on the cusp of changing the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And in my estimation of all the chiefs that I've known, he's number one. Number two would be Chief James White. And welcome to the show, Brother White.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. And thank you. Wow.
Yeah. I had a moment with you where I saw one day where there was something that tragic went on, and it just affected you so. And I said to myself, here's a man that really cares and carries this with him. And so I was so glad when I saw that you went from that end to where you are now, where you can actually hopefully try to prevent some of this, help people who are going through crisis. You're now the CEO of DWIN, Detroit Wayne Integrative Health Network. So glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Reverend. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So tell people exactly what DWIN does.
Yeah, so the Detroit Wayne Integrated Health Network is the largest and most diverse community mental health organization in Michigan. And we've served over 123,000 people. We've got about 100 and about 800 employees, about 450 providers, and just over 200 substance use disorder providers. And that's a really a detailed way of saying we're here to help. We have a number of services from intellectual developmental disabilities to if someone is suffering from, you know, stress or depression, and they feel like they have nowhere to turn, we're here. Mental health is treatable, and unfortunately, a lot of people don't know that. They don't approach it that way. It is a treatable condition.
Yeah, and one thing I want to add real quickly, too, is because I've been involved with the faith component there, is because in our churches, people tend to go to pastors. They want to pray for them and lay hands on them. I always, as I said to you, Lloyd, believe in prayer plus.
Yes.
God has put people here, medications here, By the way, is there a help number? I want to give it out real quick. So if people out there right now, you know someone needs help, they can call.
Yeah, absolutely. 1-800-241-4949. That's 1-800-241-4949. But our mobile crisis, if you can't remember anything else, 1-844-IN-CRISIS. 1-844-IN-CRISIS. Just call that number. Put it in your phone. If it's you or someone that you love that's in crisis or dealing with something stressful or they're just not themselves, make sure you have that number at your disposal and call. We don't turn anybody away. There's no wrong door at D1.
Chief, the 707 Crisis Center, I know, recently marked its 2-year anniversary. For listeners who may not know, talk about what the 707 Crisis Center is and why it was created.
Yeah, and thank you for that. It was created to give people alternatives. I mean, we've talked about, you know, what happened when the Lafayette Clinic closed and a lot of people were left out with no services. And to the Reverend's point, I've seen firsthand when there's nowhere to turn. Oftentimes when people need a clinician, they need a counselor, they need a medical professional, they found themselves finding police officers. Something I've done for 30 years, and I love police officers, but when someone is in mental health crisis, they are not the first group. Unfortunately, they have been the first group, but they should not be the first group to turn to. With the Crisis Center, this is the first group. In the second year since opening, we've served just under 34 individuals, and we've increased year over year, 2 years in service. And so, you know, we're there to service you 24 hours, 7 days a week. And it's, you know, another thing that people tend to do is when their loved one is in crisis and prior to this facility being open, they call 911, 911 comes out, or police officers come out, or EMS comes out. And oftentimes they were transported to a hospital where they sat in an emergency room for hours, not getting the services that they need. What we're happy to say with this program is you're transported to, our 24 hours, crisis center. Sorry about that. And services are readily available immediately. We're getting you in and treated and triaged in a significantly short amount of time. And then you can start to return to your life, you know, almost immediately. And then upon your release, we're following up with you to make sure that you get to that first appointment, which we've recognized is the difference between success and situation. Is got to get back to that first appointment after you're stabilized.
So, Chief, I will always call you Chief.
Me too.
Is this a professional pivot for you? I mean, have you had this kind of role in the past? I mean, I know that certainly dealing with every amelioration of agony as a chief, you see firsthand what untreated mental health is like. You see what grief is like. But is this a professional pivot, or is this, you know, are you a social worker? Are you a mental health worker? Or are you just, you know, you understand my question?
Yeah, I do understand your question. Okay. It's a great question. Yeah. By education, I am a licensed mental health therapist, state of Michigan licensed. But I also have my background in education and sociology, and I have a graduate degree in mental health counseling. And then I went on to get my license in counseling.
So, let me interrupt you real quick. I knew that. I just want people to hear that, because people don't know that that's who you are before you became the chief. And that's what you do where you are now. So you do have that background and that training.
Yes, I do. And you know, you cannot do that job as chief without seeing the need in our community that go beyond law enforcement. You just can't ignore it. And so my education helped me there. It was always something that I wanted to do once I left policing. But then when I was in policing, I found that the need was as great, you know, in the police department as it was outside the police department, because they saw so much, they see so much. The officers were constantly, I mean, look at all what's happened in the past few days, just over the weekend, not just Detroit. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. All over the state, right? Metro Detroit is seeing an uptick in violence. You're seeing officer-involved shootings, and these officers have to deal with that. They have to internalize it. But to your point, you know, the community needs it. It's something I saw in my own family. It's something, you know, that I wanted to be a part of the solution and not just perpetuate the problem and to stigmatize the ideas around behavioral health. It's the only condition of the body that we treat as if it's not attached to the body. I mean, could you imagine walking around with a broken leg for months and talking yourself out of treatment because of the stigma associated with it? I mean, but at the same time, it's something that we all deal with. Well, we all may not have a broken leg. We will most certainly all have those dark days and those moments of grief and those moments of loss and those moments of tragedy that we all have to deal with, whether it be the loss of a loved one, a divorce, whether it be, you know, just stress of a loved one that's addicted to drugs and alcohol, or some internal struggles that we're dealing with our own lives. You know, it's something that we all deal with. It crosses all demographic. It crosses, yeah, you know, economic and otherwise. And so my goal here, you know, before I call it a career forever this time, and is to do everything I can to help our community, help myself, and help the people that look to D1 for services.
James White, President, CEO of the Detroit Wayne Integrated Health Network. Always great to talk with you, sir.
I have another term for him.
Okay.
He's the wedge between passing the buck and red tape.
Hmm.
He's the one that gets it done.
Well, we appreciate him, too. Nice to talk with the Chief. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. You guys have a great day.
You as well. Coming up, newly elected Detroit City Councilman Denzel McCampbell. We'll talk to him about what his plans are for the future here on 760 WJR.
Man, I like that. I'm about to bounce.
You're bouncing around.
WJR 760 AM. I'm the guest co-host, of course, joined by the incomparable, indomitable Lloyd Jackson. At this point, it's very timely to have a dear friend of mine who I supported for council in an area where Dable does most of his work. That's the Honorable Denzel McCammell. Welcome to the show, Denzel.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I think it's very timely. You know, we have all this conversation about an organization whose membership is sparse in considering larger organizations, but yet is beginning to wield such political power and clout. It's the conversations going on from the White House to New York. You are a Democratic Socialist. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
And by the way, I am too. I actually was with Michael Harrington, one of the founders of the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee of America. I subscribe to those principles. But what do you make of all this brouhaha?
You know, Rev, it is very interesting because we know that there are folks across the political spectrum, and also, you know, on the left when it comes to politics here in the country. And as you mentioned, democratic socialism is not something that's new. But what I'm seeing across the country and what we've seen even here in Detroit with my election and you know, we have the congresswoman, there are multiple state representatives, and another council member as well who is a DSA member. But we are seeing that folks are wanting something new and also wanting folks that are running in an office to actually deliver on what working families need. And what I mean by that is ensuring that when we are making decisions on behalf of folks, that we have the people's need in mind and not necessarily, you know, corporate interests or interests that are not aligned with the folks that we represent. So from, you know, Mayor Mamdani in New York City, now you have congressional members that are winning, not in just New York City. And I just want to stress that is what's in view right now, but you have folks across the country who are DSA members, who are Democratic Socialists, and are getting popularity and votes from folks who want a new political view in these seats of power.
You're still early in your first term on Detroit City Council, Councilman McCampbell. What surprised you most about the job so far versus what you expected when you were on the campaign trail?
You know, I will say the thing that surprised me, you know, I think just the vast amount of issues that folks are facing in the city. And I would say, you know, it's a surprise, but also what we knew going in. But we're at a point where having a new administration with Mayor Sheffield, having new members on council, we're seeing, I would say, a new energy of folks wanting to ensure that we are taking care of what's going on in neighborhoods. And it is a lot of work, but I really enjoy it to be able to wake up every morning to say, how are we going to solve problems and how are we going to be innovative in that approach. Let's try new things. Let's see, how do we actually uplift what our young people need? How do we get more activity in the neighborhoods and do development that actually addresses those needs? That is something that, you know, it is an absolute honor to be able to do that, because I know that my neighbors need that leadership, are asking for that leadership, and are asking for a thriving city for all.
So one of the issues that is presently plagueing Detroit, not something only in Detroit, are teen takeovers. Give me your take on that. What can we do? Is it different here? Is it not as bad as it is elsewhere? I mean, what are we going to do about it?
I would say I don't think it is bad here as it is elsewhere. But I will also say, Rev, that when I look at the teen takeovers, the underlying thing that I see is that our youth are demanding that we do more on their behalf. And what I mean by that is that having more things for our young folks to do. And, you know, together with the administration, we've dedicated resources for that. I will say Mayor Sheffield with the Occupy the Summer is an initiative that I think is something that is addressing that. But this is going to be a long term. As we're thinking about the need for even skating rinks, bowling alleys, places for our teens and youth to gather and have safe fun, but also not only just on the recreation side or having things to do, we really have to make sure that we are raising our youth, because it does take a village. How are we getting that support to our parents? How are we going directly to them to have a conversation on what is it that, whether it's after school programming or inside the schools around conflict resolution, increasing social skills and things. One thing that I remind folks a lot is that we are talking about a generation of youth who were deeply impacted by the pandemic. These are kids that had at least a year that they had to have virtual schools, and that makes an impact on the social skills and such as well. So I look at it as a call out to those who have the resources and power to actually uplift the needs of our young folks. And it's going to take time, but I think here in Detroit, we are doing what's needed to meet folks, our young folks, where they are, and get to work on that. And I think we're gonna solve it, and we're gonna have a city where our youth are actually having things to do, and also where our youth are supported.
Detroit City Councilman Denzel McCampbell, we appreciate you coming on, my brother, and I know we'll be talking more with you throughout the year, so I appreciate it, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely.
He's the D in Detroit. Denzel in Detroit.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate you all. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Care.
Coming up, we're going to be talking with the Wayne County Treasurer, and a lot of people think, you know, when you hear the Wayne County Treasurer, it's like, okay, here's the person who's going to take my house or foreclose on my house. The Wayne County Treasurer has ways for you to stay in your house. They want you to stay in your
house. And unfortunately, they come to him after the fact.
Yes.
When if they go to him before it happens, he can do something about it.
Let's talk to him about it next at 8:49 on JR Morning. Welcome back to JR Morning on a Monday here in the city of Detroit. We're trying to get in touch with the Wayne County Treasurer, Eric Sabree. But in the meantime, my guest co-host this morning, the Reverend Horace Sheffield. Glad to have you here. I'm so glad to have you here at this particular time.
I'm going from co-host to guest for the last segment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
If this was a labor union, you had to pay me for two jobs.
That's right. So I got to ask you now. Sure. Your daughter is the mayor, and
they call her Madam Mayor.
That's what I call her when
Mary
I see her.
Or whatever.
I call her Madam Mayor when I see her.
Okay.
But I would just like to know, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to know, just how was she growing up as a kid?
Well, you know, I think that some of the things that Mary had to deal with early, most notably supposedly being diagnosed with a learning disability, that was really her inability to see. I had it at Herlong Cathedral School, where my dad was a member, and the teacher called me over, you know, your daughter has a learning disability. And so I took her out to, I can't think of the woman's name. I love her to death.
Okay.
Out in Oak Park. And she said, no, your daughter doesn't have a learning disability. I mean, it affected me because I saw how my daughter looked.
Yeah.
And then the teacher put her in the front of the class, and she changed learning. Lynn Masters is her name.
Okay.
Who's 90-some years of age, who was so delighted with Mary One.
Still here.
She took Mary and put Mary in a position where Mary finished college in 2.5 years.
Mm.
As you know, Mary's extremely bright,
mm-hmm.
reads well.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. But the other one that I always talk about is Mary was, you know, Mary was short and a little pudgy at a certain point, but she was playing basketball.
Okay.
And this big girl, when Mary would go to do a layup, would just run her into the wall. I mean, just run into the wall, and the coach called a timeout. I came down from the stands because, you know, I played center at Saginaw Valley.
Yes, sir.
And she said, well, Mary, you know, you just have to go around. You just have to, well, that's just part of the game. I said, Mary, come in. She said, what, Daddy? I said, next time you go to the hole, dip your shoulder, lean into her, and drive her into the wall and take your shot. And next time Mary had a fast break, that girl went to get in her way. Mary drove in the wall and then put the ball up and made it and got a plus one.
Oh, okay.
That's the best thing I can tell you. Okay?
Eric Sabree is on the line. We did find out. So let's talk to the Wayne County Treasurer, Eric Sabree. Mr. Treasurer, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
For listeners who may not fully understand what, you know, stand it, what does the Wayne County Treasurer actually do day to day, and why is that role so critical in people's lives?
Well, what we do, we collect delinquent taxes for when the communities don't collect their taxes, summer and winter taxes, they turn them over to the county treasurer on March 1st of every year. And we borrow money, give them the 100% of the money as though they collected everything. And this program is unique in Michigan. We just funded them last Friday for last year's delinquent taxes that we took. And then we go out and collect the debt from everyone. So we just funded the communities so they don't have any interruption in their services. They mm-hmm. get all the taxes as though they collected 100%.
Mm-hmm.
We collect their debt. That's one of the main things that we do. But we do, when the communities collect their current taxes, like they start in July 1st, and the tax bills are coming out from all the local communities, then what we do is we distribute that money to all the taxing authorities, the library, community college, all the different parks, jails, so forth. We do that. And we issue jury duty checks. We keep up with all the county's funds. We invest the county's money. And also we try to keep people from losing their homes by notifying them about the deadlines and offer payment plans to people who are behind.
By the way, just so you know, the treasurer and I were in seventh grade homeroom together.
Wow.
We not only share that, but we also share the success of daughters and et cetera. You know, he has two children who mm-hmm. are judges.
Mm-hmm.
But what he really does is go out of his way and has been more successful than any previous county treasurer of keeping people in their homes. Does not get enough credit for that. I mean, I've been with him, and I know the chagrin that he has if someone loses a home. He does not want anyone to lose a house. Can you tell some of the things you've done, Treasurer, to make certain that they know they don't have to lose their homes?
Well, we do. We go all of our way to send notices out. We have payment agreements that we work with people, so they don't have to pay all the taxes at once. They can stretch out the payments. And then once people sign up for a payment agreement, we get their phone number. We text them every month. We send out thousands of text messages every month to taxpayers who are in payment plans, letting them know what the deadline is, how much they owe. And we try to do everything we can to let them know. Even if they have a hardship, there's an extension we can offer them. If they have a medical emergency, maybe they lost a job, and they were caregivers for somebody in their family who's sick and had a hardship, they can get an extension for another year.
So what's the number for people to call? And I think it's important to also tell people when that deadline is. It comes every year.
Oh, yeah. It's March 31st every year for people to pay their taxes or get into a payment agreement. They can call us at 313 224-5990. There's another important deadline, too, I want to mention. It's July 1st. For anyone who did lose their property, they should file a notice of intent to claim any excess proceeds from the sale. If we sell a property that's foreclosed, we're entitled to the taxes and a 5% commission of the sale from the state allows that for the treasurer. Anything else, the former owner can apply to get the proceeds. And a lot of people don't apply. They have to do it by July 1st. So July 1st is approaching, and that's why I wanted to mention that deadline.
All right. Eric Sabree, Wayne County Treasurer, always a pleasure speaking with you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Thank you. And I really hope you all have a great day today.
Thank you,
as well.
Thank you, Treasurer.
Reverend Horace Sheffield.
Hey, man, it's been
it went
blast,
by quick, didn't
man.
It?
Man, I mean, please, don't not bite me back. I don't know if I like you the most or your producer, man. He's quite a gas, too.
Brian, yeah, definitely. Well, it's good to see you.
Good to be seen and not viewed.
And always welcome here on 760 WJR.
Thank you so much, man.
And that'll do it for us for the JR Morning Show. Kevin Dietz and All Talk is next.